I want real solutions, not just campaign promises.
There's so much media bias and misinformation. I can't keep things straight.
I don't know who to trust. What am I supposed to do? Take my neighbor's word for it?
Why is it always the other guy's fault? What about accountability?
I'm split on issues, stuck between parties. What do I do now?
Did you know independent voters are America's largest voting bloc?
Yeah, but they totally feel politically homeless. Like, the two-party system just ignores them.
Independent voters, you're overlooked no more. This is our time to shine and stand together. You're listening to Independent Times.
Because you ain't going to sell me none of your progressive pink or welfare ideas.
Then what have you got against welfare?
Everything.
Are you related to any of the executives at Lockheed?
Huh?
Well, you must be because you're supporting them.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about government subsidy. You're giving welfare to the rich.
Welfare to the rich? Welfare?
Right.
What is she? Welfare? Nobody in this country needs welfare. We got the highest standard of living ever.
And 6 to 7 million people out of work.
The grossest national product.
And an inflated economy.
We got the strongest country on earth.
Capable of being wiped out in 10 minutes by the second strongest country on earth.
Not if we get them first, lady.
It's not the best of times, nor the worst, but these are undoubtedly independent times. Welcome to Independent Times, the podcast for politically homeless, independent voters navigating our polarized world. I'm your host, Lisa Singer, and I'm so grateful you could join us today. Churchill's famous quote, "Democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the rest," is a cynical yet profound defense of democracy. But was he right? Churchill understood that democracy is a messy, slow, and often frustrating process, filled with endless debates, political compromises, and at times, disappointing politicians. We see this firsthand in our own country, where trust in government is at historic lows. For instance, a 2025 Pew Research study found that 65% of young Americans are so disillusioned that they're open to radical change. This alarmingly low trust isn't just about corruption or broken promises, but also a growing feeling that politicians prioritize their own enrichment and the interests of elites over the public good. So where do we go from here? Today, we'll bridge the gap between our widespread distrust in government and its essential function. We'll do this by examining the distinct roles both major political parties believe the government should play in our lives. By clarifying their core intentions, you can tune out most of the noisy political rhetoric and focus on the proposals for the issues you care about most. While the politics of our nation is indeed messy, Churchill was right. Democracy, with all its flaws, is still the best we have. We're joined today by my co-hosts, award-winning journalist, host, and producer of Fox 24 News Now, Leila Gulen, and Emmy Award-winning television news host, Brian Gallo. Welcome.
Thanks, Lisa. I mean, as we know, this is a crucial topic because independents don't just distrust the media. They've lost complete faith in the very institutions that are supposed to serve them. I mean, it has profound consequences, right?
Exactly. And, you know, you can't talk about a loss of trust until you first understand what kind of government we have and what it's even supposed to be doing.
Thank you both so much. Before we begin our discussion on our low trust in government, let's start with a quick reality check. Out of 193 countries that are members of the United Nations, and for most people on Earth, the options boil down to three buckets of the type of country you get to live in, either a democracy, a theocracy, or some flavor of dictatorship. A real functioning democracy, that's the rarest one by far. Here's a short video from the United Nations reminding us why democracy is worth fighting for.
Democracy means rule or government by the people. It's the power of ordinary citizens exercised directly or through representatives to shape their own future. Democracy matters because at its best, it protects us. It protects our most vulnerable. It gives voice to people that do not have voices. It's a system that has evolved. It's an idea that has grown over many, many years, over many, many civilizations. Democracies are facing challenges in today's world. Mis and disinformation and a shrinking media freedom is a real challenge. A lot of people can find their own truths. They don't know what to believe, or they believe what they want. Linked also to this is a growing lack of accountability, that you can say what you want and do what you want, and you don't need to account for that. Democracy needs to be prioritized. It's the system of government that our history has shown to be the fairest, the most inclusive, the most transparent, the most accountable, the most adaptive. To support democratic values, step one is to engage. Engage means voting. It means following up on that vote by working with your representative to understand what they're doing, to make sure that the policies that they campaigned on and promised to implement are what is guiding them in terms of their governance.
Okay, but before we get into the discussion, let's make sure everyone's on the same page. The U.S. technically invented a new type of government around 250 years ago. We are what's called a constitutional federal republic. Basically, our constitution sets up government with checks and balances. We have a federal system to handle all the big national tasks like defense, and elected representatives to serve us.
Okay, I understand all of that, but if we're technically a constitutional federal republic, why are we always called a democracy?
We're called a democracy thanks to the Bill of Rights, especially the First Amendment, which guarantees our voice in government through free speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press. And we've expanded voting rights over time through the 15th, the 19th, the 26th Amendments. Democracy technically means power to the people. And here in America, that's we the people. And it's our job to hold our leaders accountable through our votes, petitions, and peaceful protests. The president, senators, Congress, all of our local officials, they need constant reminders that they are public servants working for us. Here's how President Obama explained it.
As I was driving down those little towns in my big bus, and we slowed down, and I'm standing in the front, and I'm waving. I'm seeing little kids with American flags, and, you know, grandparents in their lawn chairs, and, you know, folks outside a machine shop, you know, and passing churches and cemeteries and corner stores and farms. You know, I'm reminded about why I wanted to get into public service in the first place. You know, sometimes there are days in Washington that will drive you crazy. But getting out of Washington and meeting all of you and seeing how hard you're working, how creative you are, how resourceful you are, how determined you are, that just makes me that much more determined to serve you as best I can as President of the United States. So,
I think one of the issues, Lisa, is that a lot of Americans have forgotten just how precious and rare America and democracy are in the world today. You know, some of these recent protests have been pretty scary to watch. And I saw this wild YouTube debate on Jubilee show called Surrounded, where journalist Mehdi Hasan faced 20 far-right conservatives. And one guy, Connor, I think, straight up just said he'd pick fascism over democracy and even praised a Nazi theorist, if you can believe it. It's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call. You know, some folks are ready to just give up our freedoms.
You know, I don't think Connor really understands what fascism looks like or what life is like outside a full democracy. And let's be honest, it isn't pretty.
So let's pull on that thread a bit more. Our founding fathers dreamed of a government of the people, by the people, for the people. But globally, that's very rare.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very rare indeed. Out of 193 countries that are members of the United Nations, only about 26 are full democracies with fundamental freedoms like free speech and fair elections and independent press to hold elected officials accountable. Compare that to places like Russia, where protesting or criticizing Putin can mean jail, or China, where the internet is completely censored, Or how about North Korea, where you have virtually no individual freedoms whatsoever and can't even leave the country?
I try not to even think about what life is like outside of democracies. I will never take my freedom for granted, even with the mistakes and flaws in this country. Like, the thought of not having the First Amendment, the right to vote, or say in how we are governed is crippling to even think about. The idea of living in a theocracy or under communism, where you are told how to live your life, it feels like a prison to me.
Oh, good. But get this, only 8% of the world's 8 billion people live in a fully democratic system. You know, about 59 have flawed democracies with some elections or press freedom, but often riddled with corruption and or questionable votes. And the rest are authoritarian regimes or monarchies or theocracies with little to no voice for the people. We're in a really small club, and you know what? It's pretty fragile.
Here's another way to think about it. In 2016, I remember what Thomas Friedman wrote in the New York Times opinion article. He was quoting a friend of his who said, "You Americans kick around your country like it's a football, but it's not a football. It's a Fabergé egg, and you can break it."
Is really profound. Yeah. I hope that the independents are the ones keeping this experiment alive and bringing this country together. Yeah, let's not break it. Let's not break it.
Agreed. And that's why independents matter so much. They're not just politically homeless. They're the ones, in my opinion, who hold the key to our future.
I do think we should discuss how we even got here. Like, how there's so much polarization and low trust in government. It feels hopeless now. I know sometimes I feel hopeless.
I try not to feel hopeless, but I do understand why 89 million Americans didn't show up to vote in 2024. I do understand why trust in government is at 22%. I do understand why trust in the media is at 31%. But the bottom line is, I think we all can agree, those are not healthy numbers.
No, they're not. Well, polarization is at record highs now in the country. And I remember in our first episode, Lisa, we had showed a clip of Andrew Yang, the founder of the Forward Party, saying that we are at civil war levels of division. So that's pretty frightening.
It can be, but in some weird way, I could say the good news is that there has always been intense fighting and polarization between the parties, and we survived it. We survived it for 250 years.
Well, it doesn't make me feel any better. Let's put it that way.
I'm sorry, and I totally get why that doesn't make you feel any better. That fear is real, and it comes straight from the system of accountability.
The system of accountability is broken. And that's why people are feeling so hopeless and they just check out.
I totally get why so many people feel hopeless and just want to check out from the news, especially when you're part of the 60% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. Every single day is a fight. You're not lazy. You're drowning. Credit card delinquencies are spiking. Family farms are going bankrupt at double last year's rate. Mortgage late payments are surging, and 7 in 10 people are skipping meals just to get by. These aren't statistics. These are our neighbors. So let's hear from our fellow Americans in their own words.
We're joined now by the founder and president of the National Black Farmers Association, John Boyd Jr. Sir, thanks so much for being with us. What are you hearing from farmers about what they're going through right now?
Well, you know, this is the worst time since the 80s, and I was farming in the 80s, you know, where farmers were going out of business, farm foreclosures are on the rise, farm suicides are on the rise, farm bankruptcies are on the rise. And this is a bad time in this country for American agriculture and America's farmers.
The other countries that wonder and say that Americans are just fat and lazy and they don't do anything to better themselves. All of this for $115. We're not making it. This is going to feed my kids for less than a week. And this doesn't include any dinners. There are no dinners here. This is lunch and snacks. I don't know how people are making it. It's hard out there.
Inflation was crazy, but never did I ever just spend $20 on some eggs and a jar of peanut butter.
When did fast food become so expensive? Go to Wendy's and a Baconator combo is $16. $16?
What can I say? History is literally screaming with warnings right now that when citizens in a country can't breathe, when they feel like they are under such terrible economic constraints, they lose trust in their democratic government and the democracy can shatter. And what happens is the door swings wide open to strongmen who make all these big promises that they alone can fix whatever the woes are of the day. And you don't have to look much further than Iran in 1979 or Viktor Orban in Hungary or Greece in the 2010s or Russia today. All of those countries were at one time full democracies, but now they're barely democracies, if at all. And those shifts were ushered in when the citizens were so desperate for change to the economic crisis of the time that they basically gave up their freedoms in exchange for a strongman to come to office. So suffice to say, we in America, we're not immune from that. So who has the answer? I mean, the Democrats traditionally say that the government can help step in, the government can help level the playing field, the government can hold big corporations accountable. And then on the flip side, conversely, the Republicans are saying, no, we got to let the free market sort it out. So I think we have to continue our discussion about history and using it as our guide. And I really hope I haven't scared you, but it's really, really important for all of us to recognize just how high the stakes are right now.
Yeah, but Lisa, it's definitely worth noting that America has had, you know, these brief shining moments of high patriotism, you know, and there has been trust in its government, especially after facing a common enemy. The first came after the War of 1812. Our victory against the British gave rise to an era of good feelings, a period of great national pride and political unity at that time. And then later, after the Civil War, a feeling of national purpose came from the idea of rebuilding the Union and expanding westward. So these moments were particularly powerful, but, you know, unfortunately, they were rather short-lived.
And that's the key difference. In the 20th century, we had a period of high trust that was much more sustained. Like for decades after World War II, trust in the government was high, peaking at around 80% in the early 1960s. It was a time of bipartisan consensus on major projects like the interstate highway system and the GI Bill. The government was seen as a can-do institution, and Americans were proud of what it was accomplishing.
So it seems as if in our 249-year history, there's only been three short-lived times where there was high trust in government. That's somewhat depressing. For the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln had to expand the role and the size of the government. And then after the war, it returned to a more laissez-faire government model, which defined the era leading up to the Great Depression in 1929. But the Great Depression was a perfect storm. And that's when everything changed.
Correct. When Democrat President Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected in 1932, his New Deal was a total revolution. Its design was based on the three R's: relief for the unemployed, recovery of the economy, and reform of the financial system to prevent a future crisis. Through massive federal spending and dozens of new agencies, he provided tangible help for millions.
Here's a video I put together of the journey from the 1929 crash to Roosevelt's first inauguration, the moment America decided government had to step in.
In 1933, America was facing the gravest threat to its survival since the Civil War. It was a calamity that Americans thought impossible. But America's capitalist economy had simply stopped working. So many banks had failed that 9 million people had their savings wiped out. One out of every four Americans had no income at all. There was so much resentment of the establishment that it was spilling over into violence. Destitute veterans of World War I who'd risked their lives for freedom were met with tear gas when they took their grievances to Washington. Some Americans, convinced that capitalism was dead, were marching in the name of communism. This was a worldwide depression, and in Germany it helped to make Adolf Hitler possible. In 1933, 34 days after Hitler became Chancellor of Germany, Franklin Roosevelt became President of the United States.
So by the time Roosevelt takes office, the stock market is closed down, most of the banks in the country have closed their doors, and all eyes are turned toward Washington.
People didn't know much about Roosevelt. He came from a famous family, he had money, and he had been governor of New York. But he'd been elected almost as an act of desperation. President Hoover had done so badly.
This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. I shall ask the Congress for the one remaining instrument to meet the crisis, broad executive power, to wage a war against the emergency as great as the power that would be given to me if we were in fact invaded by a foreign foe.
The president took it as a mandate for a larger, more powerful, more compassionate federal government. Roosevelt's vision was the driving force in American politics for two generations.
Yeah, this was a fundamental shift. The government's role changed from a hands-off observer, if you will, to an active provider and safety net. This battle between the old deal of small government and the new deal of a bigger, more active government is a debate that we've been fighting ever since. So to help the American people better understand this monumental shift, FDR went to the people with his fireside chats, if you remember. This was on the radio. And he famously said, democracy has disappeared in several other great nations because they had grown tired of unemployment and insecurity. We in America know that our own democratic institutions can be preserved and made to work, end quote. So he was telling people that a strong government was necessary to save democracy basically from despair. That was the first time a president truly spoke so directly to Americans in their homes. And I would say Ronald Reagan would later use a very similar approach in his own radio addresses to basically sell his idea of a smaller government.
And here's FDR himself in one of his fireside chats explaining how democracy only works when government helps people.
Disappeared not because the people of those nations disliked democracy, but because they had grown tired of unemployment and insecurity, of seeing their children hungry while they sat helpless in the face of government confusion, government weakness, weakness through lack of leadership in government. Finally, in desperation, they chose to sacrifice liberty in the hope of getting something to eat. We in America know that our own democratic institutions can be preserved and made to work. But in order to preserve them, we need to act together to meet the problems of the nation boldly and to prove that the practical operation of democratic government is equal to the task of protecting the security of the people. History proves that dictatorships do not grow out of strong and successful governments, but out of weak and helpless governments. If by democratic methods people get a government strong enough to protect them from fear and starvation, their democracy succeeds. But if they do not, they grow impatient. Therefore, the only sure bulwark of continuing liberty is a government strong enough to protect the interests of the people, and a people strong enough and well enough informed to maintain its sovereign control over its government.
When President Roosevelt took office in 1933, he saw government as the solution. So he launched a massive expansion of federal programs known as the New Deal to lift Americans out of the despair that they were in. He saw Americans starving in the street. He saw stockbrokers jumping out of the windows. He saw farmers going bankrupt. And he believed that the time was right for the government to get involved and to make sure that this never happens again. But then fast forward to the 1980s, and President Reagan flipped the script, and he famously said, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And this debate of big government versus small government is basically what defines our politics today. Not entirely, but it is a large, large part of it. Here's then Governor Reagan on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson in 1975, delivering the line that launched a revolution.
We're talking with former Governor Reagan, and during the break we were discussing what I mentioned, that I thought most people were not apathetic. I think they're confused, basically, because you hear intelligent people from both political parties or in the middle, conservatives and liberals, and they all seem to have different answers as to what is going wrong in the country. Some people say, well, let's let the government spend billions of dollars, and then other people say, no, no more federal spending. Let's give the tax rebates. And the other intelligent people say, no tax rebates. We've got to do this and do that. So everybody is confused. How do you see the thing? How are we going to get out of this?
Well, Johnny, I think one of the things is that people keep looking to government for the answer, and government's the problem. A moment ago, you asked, you know, about people and feeling not only confused, but low and down in America. First of all, the American people, if they would just take a little inventory and look around, you triple our troubles, and we're better off than any other people on earth. And we've asked so much of government, and we've gotten in the habit over the last 40 years of thinking that government has the answers. There's very little that government can do as efficiently and as economically as the people can do themselves. And if government would shut the doors and sneak away for about 3 weeks, we'd never miss them. Now, if the people
want to... Anybody you had in mind particularly?
That debate about the size and role of government in our personal lives and businesses is crucial, of course. It needs to continue. But honestly, it's only part of the story. The other, I would argue, and perhaps more damaging part, is when the government betrays us and it betrays the public's trust. So, you know, it's one thing to disagree on policy, but it's so, so much worse to discover that our leaders have acted in bad faith and lied to us.
We see it all the time. You know, we've seen it between lies from the Vietnam War, the deceit of Watergate, the Iran-Contra situation, the justifications for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. When the government is not honest, it becomes extremely difficult to trust.
Honestly, both parties have spent years breaking promises and gridlocking Washington, so it's no wonder people don't trust a word out of D.C. And we have a justice system that keeps letting the powerful skate, and the same elites who got trillion-dollar bailouts in 2008 while families lost their homes. Yeah, the resentment makes perfect sense. Here's 60 Minutes laying out exactly how Wall Street got rescued and Main Street got crushed back in 2008.
On Friday, Congress finally passed and President Bush signed into law a financial rescue package in which the taxpayers will buy up Wall Street's bad investments. The numbers are staggering, but they don't begin to explain the greed and incompetence that created this mess.
Somehow, through, I will call it a criminal neglect and incompetence, the people at the top of these firms chose to look away, to take more risk, to enrich themselves, and to put the shareholders, and indeed the country itself, ultimately the country's economy, at risk. And it is truly not only a shame, it's a crime.
I don't think that there's been any accountability. So many people who were totally irresponsible walked away with so much money. And some people were taken totally to the cleaners. It was a disgrace. It was a disgrace. There were a lot of people involved.
And if this type of thing could happen without anybody being held accountable by the enforcement division of the chief regulator of this industry, then, you know, what are we missing here? And I'd like to know the answers to those questions. And I think that most of the American public would as well.
Wow, that's a long list of betrayals.
Here's the good news. Independent voters are the hope that we need to force the two parties to start appealing to the vast majority in America and not just the extremes. We just have to make sure that we amplify our voices and make sure that we are seen and heard by the politicians.
It almost sounds impossible.
It's difficult, but I don't think it's impossible.
Okay, well, it's a serious problem, and this helps explain why roughly half of Americans are now choosing to register as independent voters. They're fed up with the political infighting.
Definitely. Independent voters are definitely fed up with the political infighting, and the polls show it.
You know, it sounds dire, but there is definitely a role for us as citizens to play in this. You know, what can our listeners do, do you think, to help restore trust in the government?
I think it starts locally. Attend town hall meetings, write letters to your representatives, volunteer in your community. When you get involved, you see how government actually works firsthand, and that's a powerful antidote for cynicism.
Yeah. Also, not super exciting, but make sure you're registered to vote and mark your calendar now, right now, for upcoming local, state, and federal elections you can participate in. Make voting a priority now so you're prepared when the time comes.
I have to add this, Lisa. It is so imperative that you stay informed. We talked last week about how to find reliable news sources. It's not always easy, but a well-informed citizenry is absolutely essential for a republic to function, not just as the founders intended, but you have to be proactive today.
So it's pretty easy to understand why Churchill called democracy the worst form of government, except for all the rest. Because it is flawed, it is frustrating, it is full of hard truths. But here's where we, as independent voters, can reclaim some ground. Rebuilding trust, I think, starts with us. And the independents, like us, are in the middle. And we can demand that the extremism from both parties come to an end. And it will help us define the future conversations of our politics. And it reminds me of this really beautiful story from Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. Tensions were as raw as they can get. And there was a cabinet member who urged him to oust a general that he openly disliked. But Lincoln looked over at the man. He paused and he said, "I do not like that man. I must get to know him better." He wasn't excusing flaws. He was owning his own biases. And he was insisting that empathy and understanding were the way to forge unity from division. And it was in a time of national fracture. And that mindset turned some of Lincoln's opponents into his allies, and it helped heal a broken nation. And that's the hopeful spark that we in America need right now. And that's why we've chosen as our independent hero of the week, Braver Angels. Braver Angels is a grassroots organization, and they're taking a stand against toxic politics. They're trying to lead a movement. They've been around for a number of years, but their work continues to bridge the partisan divide and rebuild trust one conversation at a time. You can learn more about their brave and beautiful work at braverangels.org. But for right now, we're going to show you a clip from the organization in their own beautiful words.
Politics has always been a passionate subject, and we've always had deep political disagreements. That's the way it's supposed to be. But we've gotten to the point where people can't even talk to one another. Americans no longer see their political opponents as simply wrong or misguided. They see them as bad people whose ways of thinking are dangerous and incomprehensible. They see them as enemies. This level of rancor and mistrust threatens our democracy, and it makes it harder for us to move forward as a nation, regardless of who the president is.
The fact that we live in what feels like, some people call it, a cold civil war, that takes a toll on all of us.
We've been excommunicated from a lot of our friends. in the last couple of years, and it makes me sad.
This is one organization that's doing a lot to kind of overcome that and get people back to where we were, which is neighbors, friends, communities.
Better Angels was born in response to the crisis of polarization. We are truly bipartisan. From our staff to our funding to our board of directors, we're evenly split, half conservative, half liberal. Everything we do comes from the bottom up. We're an almost entirely volunteer-led operation. We wanted to see, could we get together a group of folks who'd voted for Trump and a group of folks who'd voted for Clinton and get them in a room together to see how can we bring people together to not get them to agree or to come to the middle, but to maybe change how they think about one another.
There was so much grace and room to listen to one another.
You get to see people as human beings again.
There is reason to hope, not because we agree on all of the issues, but because on the issues that we disagree upon, we still disagree as good people.
What we've been saying is that this year, it's not enough to call in our Better Angels. We have to call in our Braver Angels.
Go to braverangels.org. Sign up to join our email list. And at the end of the day, try to treat each other with respect, empathy, and find the courage needed to talk to people, even if, and perhaps especially when, you don't agree with them.
Thank you, Brian and Layla. It's important to remember that progress requires a great deal of effort, but it is still possible.
Keep digging for the truth, Lisa. You do it so well.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. And as I say all the time, question everything.
Low trust in our government threatens our democracy, but independence, you are the key. From the Civil War to civil rights, engaged citizens have always changed our history. Now is your time. Vote, petition, protest peacefully, and stay engaged to hold leaders accountable. Thank you, Brian and Layla, and a big thanks to our listeners for joining our community at Independent Times, where politically homeless voters find clarity in a polarized world. You're not alone in this journey. Until next time, please follow, like, subscribe, share, and keep charting your own path.